This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica stations, and watch us on Free Speech TV, Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Just in time for Thanksgiving, Disney released its much-anticipated new film, Moana. Set among Pacific Islands, Moana tells the story of a young girl with magical powers, played by Auli'i Cravalho, and the demigod Maui, played by Dwayne Johnson, aka The Rock. While Moana has been touted as being Disney's most authentically crafted film about an indigenous culture, critics have pointed out that the company's massive commodification and marketing apparatus threatens to undermine any claims of respect for Native communities. Indeed, Disney's disastrous pre-Halloween rollout of a Maui skin suit costume displayed the mega corporation's agenda to repackage non-white cultures for mass consumption. My guest is Tina Nata. She is an Indigenous rights advocate, environmentalist, and educator for New Zealand's largest Indigenous university. She delivers degree-level education on the links between Indigenous heritage, rights, and environmental well-being. And she's written about the film. She now joins us live from New Zealand. Welcome to the program, Tina.
Thank you very much, Sonali, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So first, let's talk about the process that Disney went through to make this film and that it has used to give itself a veneer of authenticity, that it has respected indigenous cultures. I understand that it created a group of people, or put together a handpicked group of people that it called the Oceanic Story Trust, which had many sort of indigenous folks on it. What do you make of this approach?
Well, I think probably one of the first things to remember is that the area that we're talking about is quite large, and the directors, Clements and Musk, only spent 3 weeks traveling throughout that region before they put the film to Disney to make it, and then they went about putting together the Oceanic Story Trust based on some of the people that they met over that time. The fact remains still, though, that it is not an Indigenous story, and we have this happening throughout many types of films where we have people who it is essentially a white filmmaker who gets brown advice, and then they try to tout it as a brown story. But having brown advisors doesn't make it a brown story. It's still very much a white person's story based on the three-week jaunt throughout the Pacific, given advice by a number of, some of them, very skilled people. But, I guess I would argue that really nobody has the mana. I don't really care how skilled you are. You don't have the mana or the authority to be hocking away culture in that sense, especially over such a large region. And Disney have been very swift to drop names of some of the people that have been involved in the film. Taika Waititi is an Indigenous filmmaker from here in Aotearoa, and they are still today using his name in spite of the fact that he was only one of the very early script makers. They have marketed his name as a type of a brown tick, and they are continuing to do that with others. Nainoa Thompson is another one that they've recently been using his name also to add a level of legitimacy to the film. But at the end of the day, really, when it comes to representing such a broad, diverse group over such a huge area, there literally is nobody in my eye that could have given them the tick to do that.
So let's talk about that. I mean, the Pacific, it is the largest body of water on the planet, and the islands in the Pacific are spread across a huge geographic area and are very diverse in their cultures. We're talking about, Polynesia, we're talking about Hawaii, we're talking about New Zealand, we're talking about so many different indigenous cultures. In Moana, from what you can tell, has Disney simply simplified all of these into one generic culture that's easy for non-Indigenous folks to swallow?
Absolutely. And so you can see that this is actually that is their target audience, is that they've had to simplify this down. They've had to make it much less complex in order for it to be digestible by non-Pacific audiences. And, you know, we're not just talking about Polynesia here. We're also talking about other areas within the Pacific, Micronesia, the Carolinian Islands, Kiribati, all of these regions that have also been co-opted and amalgamated, which is incredibly problematic because they have very different languages. They have very different approaches, very different systems of divinity. And so for all of these things to be kind of amalgamated and homogenized into one story created essentially over a three-week jaunt at the beginning of the year is problematic. You know, one of the things that even the Polynesian or indigenous people have commented on, Taika Waititi had said, well, you know, it's actually just too large an area to be able to please everybody. But this is exactly the point of what we're saying, is that it brings us back to that essential question of, was this ever a good reason, a good idea to do this in the first place? And if so, who should be the ones that are benefiting it from it? Who should be the ones that are actually telling the story and within the power structure making the end decisions?
Right.
These are some of the issues that we have in relation to it.
Now, Tina, what about the fact that this story, this fictitious story, is set during pre-colonial times? I mean, if there was ever a clearly identifiable villain on many Pacific islands, it's been white colonialism, right? Except to set this story in pre-colonial eras, doesn't that completely let off the hook the colonial forces that have devastated so many communities?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're still struggling with a lot of those issues today. And I think one of the defenses of people who are trying to defend this film, they're saying that, you know, it can get people more interested in our cultures and perhaps they'll be more interested in climate change. But we have seen that that has never been the case, where a film or a culture has been used as a form of escapism, our realities from settler colonialism or the other types of issues that we face, the realities that we face, actually challenge their sense of escapism, and it reduces the value in these types of films as a type of escape. So when people engage with these films, they actually wind up moving further away from our lived realities and the challenges that we face in relation to colonialism.
But of course, they end up being able to buy the Disney figurines and all of the related toys that Disney is going to naturally have as part of the rollout of this film, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, the money that they make out of merchandising eclipses film sales within 1 year of the release of the film. So merchandising really is the large money spinner here for Disney. And a lot of that merchandise is plastic merchandise. And a lot of that plastic merchandise, ironically enough, will wind up in the Moana. We're in the middle of a huge struggle at the moment. The recent IUCN Congress highlighted plastic waste in the ocean as one of the major challenges for our ocean's well-being. And it's so ironic that so much of this merchandise is going to wind up in the ocean, being more of a problem for us.
Let's talk about the skin suit. I couldn't believe this when it first emerged that Disney, despite all of its claims for authenticity, that it was having, you know, going to have all of these indigenous advisors, had the gall to release a costume of the character Maui in its film, where literally kids, presumably American kids who celebrate Halloween, could wear the skin of this fictitious indigenous character with the tattoos, a skin-colored suit. And after they were called out, they issued the standard non-apology apology, which is, we're sorry you were offended. I couldn't believe this, Tina. Did it shock you?
It doesn't shock me when I consider the background that they've come from. I guess what would shock me would be anybody who would look at the background of Disney's behavior in this arena and expect anything too different from them. So It is. It's appalling. I think also if you're looking at this from a Polynesian or Pacific perspective, it's really appalling as well, especially in relation to the fact that not just the fact that it's skin, but the tautau that is etched into that skin has such deep significance to our culture. And so the idea that you can just put on somebody's skin and then take it off, apart from being very morbid and a bit gross in that sense, but it's also another way in which you can pretend to be somebody when you're comfortable, and then when you're not comfortable, you take the skin off. But and on top of that, there is this other layer of simply putting on something that has deep spiritual significance to us and then just throwing it away and then having it sit as a piece of waste for however long it's going to sit there. But you know, these things, you know, just be, I guess one of the issues here that this highlights is that you can have experts in many different areas be advice, you know, provide advice to your project, but that doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to be able to provide advice to the larger structure such as the merchandising. Doesn't mean that they're going to have any control over the ways in which these things are promoted. There are all of these other aspects outside of the particular content of the film that are very problematic that they aren't going to have any control over. And so, you know, they've said that, for instance, Nainoa Thompson has said to us that, you know, that's really for us to be able to address some of those larger issues, are for us to be able to educate. But I can say that as an educator, you know, I teach treaty studies, I teach decolonization, and out of a 6-month course, I have to spend 4 months undoing what a lot of people have learned from media and from these types of stories. And then I only have a short 2 months to be able to actually embed the truths about how colonialism has affected us in the Pacific. And so I really don't appreciate people like Nainoa Thompson saying to us, well, it's for us to educate because that is my business and you've actually just given me more work to do.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about how the characters themselves, Tina, are in a way, even if they are meant to honor Indigenous communities, end up sort of ridiculing them. I mean, some have pointed out that the character of Maui, played by Dwayne Johnson, is fat-shaming. It's a overweight character, and we know that some, you know, Pacific Islanders, Native Hawaiians, for example, have struggled with public health problems like obesity. Also, they sort of seem to have reduced these characters to these kind of, you know, digestible, lovable, soft characters that that are just easy to handle for a mass audience. And that just seems offensive.
It's absolutely offensive. And, you know, you used a really important word there when you said digestible. For our culture, the way in which you remove the sacredness of something is literally by consuming it and digesting it. Hmm. And to me, it's a very potent metaphor for talking about what they have done with our atua. And, you know, there are the issues of Dwayne Johnson and what he's done with Maui and the way in which Maui, well, Musker and Clements and the Disney film in general has done with Maui as well. But they have created a caricature of a sacred atua to us. You know, for myself in Aotearoa, I come from the people that claim direct descent from Maui. And many of us across Polynesia have direct descent from Maui. And the stories about him have gone into shaping who we are. They go into shaping our children as well as they grow up. And so as much as people like Dwayne would like to say, well, hey, it's entertainment and it's great to have us up on the screen, but, you know, that actually betrays the point that this is very problematic for us in terms of the way in which it's been consumed, the way in which it's been minimized, the way in which it's been caricatured, and the effects that that has upon these stories that will undoubtedly shape future generations of Pacific people and Polynesians. So, I'm not at all appreciative of that. On top of Maui, though, we also have the issues with Pele, and as much as Disney have tried to move away from saying that one of the characters called Te Kā is not supposed to be Pele, we can see quite clearly that what they call the lava witch is actually our sacred Atua Wahine, our goddess, if you will, Pele. And, you know, that's an extreme level of disrespect to have been, to have contorted that character into a lava witch or a lava monster. And then, again, I'm starting to see now the way in which they're portraying water, which for us, water, the ocean is not just a character. Our ocean is tangaroa. Our ocean is the atua. We have a worldview whereby you don't have to be a person in order to be a god. And so they've minimizing, caricatured these divine elements of our culture in a way that's very problematic for us, and they've consumed it. And once you consume something, it makes it very easy to override it and to do what you like with it. And usually the second foot that comes after the minimization of our culture is the oppression of our culture through militarization, through corporatization. But because they've been able to minimize it through consuming it, it makes it much easier for them to be able to ride over us.
Finally, Tina, how could something like a movie have been made centered on indigenous stories? It seems as though to me Disney should simply stay out of it, just stop. That we do, you know, need independent filmmakers who hail from the communities whose stories are being told to tell those stories, and that's the kind of thing that I would like my children to see. Is that possible? Can we imagine that?
Well, you know, I think if Disney stopped monopolizing that space, then probably you would be able to have a lot more Indigenous storytellers coming through and telling our stories in ways that are meaningful to us. Again, I have to go back to the question of whether it was ever a good idea in the first place to try and portray so many different diverse cultures on one hit. I think if you were going to do it, then the first place that the first thing that would have to happen is that you have to have Indigenous directors. It has to come from an Indigenous space. It would be built over a much longer period than, you know, the 3-week jaunt. The idea for the film would be built over a much longer period than that, and with much deeper discussion across the groups. That was if it was a good idea to do that in the first place. But yeah, I think we have to move away from these spaces of assuming that white storytellers using brown advisors does not make it a brown film.
And of course, it would be wonderful to see a film where the issue of colonialism is also a big part of it, and how people have resisted. I mean, those are those difficult, uncomfortable issues that Disney has always stayed away from.
Absolutely. You know, we have a very strong, proud history of resistance, and I have to say that I've been very disappointed at hearing a number of the people who participated in this film have taken the defense of, well, they were going to do it anyway, so we might as well help them. And thank goodness our relations in Standing Rock haven't taken that stance, and thank goodness the amount of people who have really stood up and refused to help the oppressor over our history have not taken that stance. I'm very grateful for the things we've been able to achieve through resistance. And yes, definitely having people like, you know, Kalakale has released fantastic documentaries about our resistance. I think if those things moved into the space of our storytelling as well, that would be a wonderful gift for our future generations.
Tina, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website. I understand that you have a blog that people could read.
I do. My blog is the Non-Plastic Māori. It looks at these intersections of Indigenous rights and environmentalism. So, yeah, if you Google the Non-Plastic Māori, either on Facebook or Google it, and you'll find me there.
We'll post a link to it as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Oh, I should say you can also go to the Mana Moana page on Facebook, and Mana Moana also has a blog page as well. So you can find the further discussions about this issue on those pages as well.
Great. We'll post a link there as well. Thank you so much. My guest is Tina Natha. She is an Indigenous rights activist, advocate, environmentalist, and educator for New Zealand's largest Indigenous university. She delivers degree-level education on the links between Indigenous heritage rights and environmental well-being. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.